Do you know many countries, as we talk about America and American prosperity, do you know many countries that in their declaration that they would literally say, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights? Endowed by our Creator. Not endowed by government. Not endowed by politics. Not endowed by wealth. Not endowed by the intellect. We, America, are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Think about that. Where does freedom come from? We're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among those are life, liberty, and Thomas Jefferson would have pursued, and private ownership, but instead we got the pursuit of happiness. I think we got the pursuit of happiness because when you read the narratives in the Old Testament, God promising the land of milk and honey, God giving Adam and Eve the Garden of Eden, God blessing beyond words, Abraham, Moses, David, Solomon. So we'll talk about that just a little bit too today, about prosperity. Who would have believed that some founding fathers would get together and put together a system by which America for 232 years is nothing short of a miracle? Why? Well, I started with God. We're endowed by our Creator. That's the founding father's idea. We're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Most of the 55 men that signed the Constitution of the United States were Christian. Not all, but most. They had a very biblical view. They said there is a God. I mean, all of them knew. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God. That denies atheism with its doctrine of no God. In the beginning, God. That denies polytheism with its doctrine of many gods. God created. That denies evolution with its doctrine of infinite becoming. It denies fatalism with its doctrine of chance. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You mean God is over here and God created the heavens and the earth? Indeed. Oh, you mean then matter is not an eternal thing? No. Matter is not eternal. God is eternal, and he's very separate from, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So that denies materialism with its doctrine of the eternity of matter. It denies pantheism that says God is in a rock, a sun, God is here, God is there. No. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so when you come from a biblical background, as so many of our founding fathers did, very, very helpful, because it sorts a lot of things out. In the beginning, God, it gives us transcendent truth. It's one thing for any one of you or me to say this is truth, this is a true statement. It's quite another when God says it's truth. And so we get to be a truth-based nation, not just some sort of a different idea. Understand something, that the French started the revolution from their country about the same time that we had our revolution. But our declaration says we're endowed by our Creator. Their revolution says endowed by wise thinking and benevolent government. I just smile when I think of the French struggling through this. I mean, the French, I know there's some good French people in this room, and so I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but I think when I think of the French, I think of what it would be like to fight a war without the French. And the answer is much like going hunting without your accordion. How many French does it take to defend Paris? Well, we don't know, because Paris has never been defended. A French military salute. How fortunate we are to have some founding fathers who, by and large, were men and women of the Word of God. Bible was very important. The way we taught reading, writing, arithmetic, and everything else was, by and large, using the Bible. Everything had a very, very strong biblical injunction. We have transcendent truth. We understand that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. It's God that gives us freedom. And so, just think about this. Compared to almost every country in the world that you can name, think about how they got their start. Wayne and I, a month ago, were down in Peru. And Inca background. Incas, I mean sacrifice. It doesn't rain, so we sacrifice children. The soil's not fertile, so we sacrifice more children. And we, blah, blah, blah. That's there. How do you get here from there when you start from this kind of a position? We, on the other hand, endowed by our Creator. And then it's bigger than that. And again, it's biblically driven. It's our founding fathers were very, very skeptical of human nature. We heard Jamie talk about that in the morning, in the service this morning. Very skeptical. That we do have a sin nature. For all have sinned and fallen short of the beauty of God's plan. There is none righteous, no, not one. All we like sheep have gone astray, each according to his own way. So we get it. We get it. Here's God. Here's us. And from birth, we are separated from this holy God. And when you're then skeptical about human nature, then you're going to probably design a government and a design a country that builds that skepticism right in, and it certainly did. They said, no, we are so skeptical. Look at James Madison said two things. One thing, he was one of the main writers of the Constitution of the United States. James Madison said, we've designed this government to protect freedom from democracy and the individual from the majority. So James Madison said, if men and women were angels, we would not have had to design this kind of a government. But since we're not angels, since we have a sin nature, whoa, how are we going to somehow circumscribe government? They chose to say, let's do it with checks and balances. Let's do it with having a constitution that has a lots of delegations and enumerations. That is, government, you can do this much, but no more. Government, you have delegated and enumerated powers. We're going to have state governments versus the federal government, the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. The whole idea is because they were skeptical of human nature and our sin nature. And you cannot trust human beings, because the fact is power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so Madison and John Adams, then they understood that. So once again, we're going to our founding basis, but my, when you start a nation and your opening Declaration of Independence is endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, you mean God cares? When you're endowed by your Creator, all of a sudden, and created in the image of God. So another idea that just permeates the founding fathers' ideas. Created in the image of God. That is to say, you and I have value. That we have, in God's eyes, we're very, very important. In fact, any one of you is infinitely more important than a whole nation. Whole nations come and go. So we get to start off from such a magnificent, magnificent beginning. Obviously, the founding fathers come loaded up with things that had gone before that they perceived to work. One of the things that they said is, look at one of the first documents that ever ended, came into the human beings, was the Magna Carta of 1215. And the Magna Carta is about rule of law. The Magna Carta is saying, look at king and queen, you can't just do anything you want to do. You're going to have to be constrained by some rule of law. And oh, by the way, when you pass that law, you have to come under that those constraints as well as the people. So all of a sudden, rule of law begins to permeate Europe. And then you have John Locke jumping on top of that in the 17th century and writing that freedom is the mainspring of economic prosperity. Freedom is a country's best investment. Freedom is a virus for which there is no antidote. And so all of a sudden you have those kinds of ideas rumbling. You then have a little bit clear distinction of what God is maybe saying in this wonderful book. God bless the Catholics, but Europe, by and large, was all Catholic, and they came from a fairly strong, obviously, Catholic view, which a lot of this wisdom was supplemented ex cathedra by somebody else. And that's all fine and good, but all of a sudden the Protestant, when Martin Luther tagged the theses, 95 theses, to the Wittenberg door in 1517, in one sense Europe would never be the same again. Because all of a sudden, we're going to start seeing what this says about man, about this, about man's sin nature, about what we're going to have to do about sin's nature, about the only way that there is to salvation is through Christ. But then when we push it on further, we're going to continue to read this, and we're going to say, well, look, here in Exodus chapter 20, verse 15, it says, one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal. Oh, really? Thou shalt not steal. You mean people have a right to a home? People have a right to some property? Yeah, exactly. And thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's whatever. And so all of a sudden, we have something out of the Judeo religion that comes out that says property is important. And private property is really important. And not stealing is really, really, really important. So we have that whole set of ideas. We're going to talk more about property in a little bit, because property is just so crucial. As John Locke said, when a nation is wrong about property, it's wrong about everything. Luckily, again, by grace, we had founding fathers that understood property. Where do you think they got it? Do you think they made it up? And so all of a sudden, Protestantism, save, not a bad idea. Invest, not a bad idea. Work hard, Protestant work ethic, work hard. How do you get it done without hard work? Do you see the beauty of all of these things that come together with these sets of ideas? And then probably, as Wayne and I get to travel the world and be with very, very poor countries and get to be very poor people, we say this, that, you know, capitalism works very well in the West, but for whatever reason, why isn't it working in Latin America? Why isn't it working in Africa? Why isn't it working in a good parts of the world? Why is it not working? And it's simply because if you're not allowed to hold title, if you're not allowed to hold deed, if as a business person you cannot incorporate under articles of incorporation, how in the world then do you build up collateral if you don't have a deed? I mean, it sounds like a kind of a complicated subject, but it's not complicated at all. Without titles and deeds, you can't build collateral. Without collateral, you can't go to a bank and borrow even $50. How do you borrow $50? A banker's not going to loan you $50 unless you have some collateral. Where did you get collateral? 80% of the entrepreneurial startups in America come from a second mortgage on your home. But you can't get a second mortgage on your home without a first mortgage, and you can't get a first mortgage without a deed, a title. There we are again. There we are. So how fortunate we are that we had founding fathers that knew and understood this. I mean, does it just want to make you get up on your toes and say, how could I be so fortunate? How could I be so lucky? How could I have so much grace come my way? How could I have so much grace come my way? Also, now this is critical, and this will be the time I'm going to ask you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 20. And we're going to read more than one verse. 1 Samuel. Now look at the people wanted a king. The people wanted a king. And Samuel the prophet said, I don't think so. But he said, Israel demands a king. And so now God, 1 Samuel chapter 8, beginning with verse 10. Sorry, I said 20. Ends with 20. 1 Samuel chapter 8. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king. He said, these will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. Now, I'm going to read about 6 or 8 verses. Would you please notice how many times it's going to be said, and he will take. No kidding, Lone Ranger. Here we go. These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his servants. He will take the tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will take your male servants and female servants and the best of your young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your flocks and you shall be his slaves. And in that day you cry out because of your king whom you have chosen for yourself, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. We want a king. We want a king. Wait, Samuel. You tell the people, you get a king, and here's what he's going to do. He's going to take and tax and takes and tax and takes and tax. That's what he's going to do. We don't care. Other nations have a king. We want a king. We want a king to go before us. So the whole idea of a little bit of limited government. The folks that wrote the Magna Carta in 1215, where do you think they came up with that? That was a Judeo-Christian idea. And the folks that wrote the Magna Carta, by and large, came from the Judeo-Christian. Where do you think John Locke, when he writes about freedom, and freedom is this and freedom is that? Well, the books he wrote all before that were very strong Christian books. Again, a strong Christian background. And so many of our founding fathers, the same. Why else would they put into our declaration, we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So this whole idea of limited government is just profound. Just profound. Because only when you can circumscribe government do you create a space for freedom that entrepreneurs and builders and creators and doers and dreamers and engineers and inventors can step into that space and begin to make things happen. Now, I got to tell you, the Magna Carta of 1215, okay, we begin to start changing Europe a little bit. The writings of Martin Luther and Protestantism, and now we begin to see another. Now we see kind of a whole continent taking on a Christian view. And then we have the writings of not only Locke and Martin Luther, but Adam Smith, who wrote The Wealth of Nations, who said, listen, if you want to create wealth, specialize and trade. Specialize and trade. Now, notice something about America. We never decided to build a wall. like the Chinese. They build the Great Wall of China. It's 6,000 miles long. It took them 4,000 years to build the wall. There's millions and millions and millions of human bodies embedded in that wall. In the building of it, they didn't have big machinery to build this massive. So that's the biggest construction project that's probably ever happened on the planet. And it is nothing short of amazing to see the Great Wall of China. But why? To keep armies and keep people out. Once again, Chinese solutions for Chinese problems. Just exactly what we see going on in Africa today. Africa is just simply African solutions for African problems. Problems, no country can get away with saying that. American solutions for American problems. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? If we took out the wisdom and knowledge out of America of what not only the Jews but many other races have brought, we'd be lost. So we never put up a wall. We don't want a wall. We want to what? Specialize and trade. Mutual gains from voluntary exchange. That's how the attitude. So we have economics beginning to fit into this. We not only have a theological point of view of a sovereign God, a God that gives us transcendent truth, a God who when God says it, it takes on meaning and it's truthful. When God says, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not, he means it. It's because it's God that said it, not us. So tons come out of that. This whole idea of limited government. Understand something. In 9 out of 10 countries throughout the world, their politicians and their governments are kind of equated with deity. It's always been that way. It goes back to the beginning of time, and certainly the Greeks and the Romans. I mean, the Greeks and the Romans didn't recognize individuals. Are you kidding me? Recognize the top, the thinkers, the people that sit around and manipulate ideas along. And yes, they were very, very good on freedom, but they were very, very poor on limited government. The Greeks and the Romans didn't have a clue about limited government. In fact, it was, you know, infanticide. Look at if the youngster is just not, kill them. Homosexuality, abortion. There's no morality there. Whereas we say, wait. Every human being is created in the image of God. So this is not some kind of a political idea. We don't want to foist something on you that is just foolish. But God said that men and women are created in His image. And we take on great value and great meaning. In fact, infinite value. More valuable than a whole country. One individual soul. More valuable than a whole country. Think about how that begins to change how you begin to design. This whole idea then out of 1 Samuel and many other places in the Bible of some limitations on government. And by the way, government is not God. Government and more countries just slip into that abyss and say, when the president speaks, it's deity speaking. When the king and queen speak, that is deity speaking. What in the world? Where is that going to all end up when you go that route? Where is it going to all end up when you don't reckon? So we talk about the common grace that has settled over America. Are you kidding me? Has God just blessed us in a real way? Not because there's anything unique about Americans. Not because we're smarter than most people. We're not. Not because we score higher on IQ tests. We don't. Not necessarily even because we're more moral people than anybody else. Believe me, I don't understand grace. Grace is undeserved. Grace is unmerited. Grace is unfair. I don't understand when Jesus talks about the prodigal son going out and just throwing away one third of the family's wealth and then coming back and the father greets him with a robe, a ring, and a party. I relate much more to the eldest son. Dad, what are you doing? This cannot be right. This sounds unfair to me. It sounds unmerited to me. It sounds undeserved to me. And yet that's just exactly what Jesus was teaching. the atrocious economics of you have 100 sheep and one gets lost and you leave the 99 to go out and find the one. Are you kidding me? There's no good economics about that. Leave those 99 uncared for. They could get out. They could, for the one. See, who cares about the one? The only time the one becomes important is when you or me is the one. And thank God, Jesus is not trying to teach good economics. He's trying to teach grace, truth and grace. It's unmerited. To leave the 99, it's undeserved. That's exactly what God does. Jesus, hanging on the cross. The one thief says, if you're God, get us down. The other thief says, look, this is a good man. His teachings are great. Jesus, will you remember me when you come into your kingdom? And Jesus says, today, thou shalt be with me in paradise. So the thief, he's a thief. He's no good. He's never been to a Sunday school class. He never gave a nickel in the offering, ever. And Jesus says to him, today, thou shalt be with me in paradise. Grace, unmerited, undeserved, unfair. That same kind of grace on America. And I think Wayne Grudem in his systematic theology calls it common grace. Is that the word that Wayne uses, common grace? But it really is. You know, like I said, just being in Peru a month ago, the Amazon River is one nasty river. There's nothing grace, there's no grace about it. It runs at twice the speed as the Mississippi River, or three times sometimes, because it's coming out of the Andes. These mountains are 18, 20, 22,000 feet tall. That's the first thing. It runs so fast, it makes it dangerous. And it's full of snakes with heads this big. A busload of people fall into the Amazon. They're dead in 5 minutes. 5 minutes, snakes eat them all up. That's not like floating down the good old Mississippi or the wide Missouri or whatever, right? You know, so grace, are we fortunate or what to have a nice tame river system? Are we fortunate enough to have an ocean on this side and an ocean? Do you know how many books have been written on countries that don't have any access to water? You know how tough it is to make life work, economic life work, when you don't have access to a big lake, a big river, or an ocean? The United States, we not only have these magnificent rivers, but we've got an ocean on one side and an ocean on the other. Did you do anything to deserve that? Did I do anything to deserve that? Are you kidding me? It's common grace. Your teenagers, your grandkids. How sweet that is to drive in their little car of whatever kind and step up to that gas pump and slip that card in and slip it out. And now it says, begin to pump. And you pump in $30, $40, $50 worth. And back and out he goes, out she goes. That is the most blessed teenager in the whole world. It's grace. It's grace. It's nothing they have done. They don't deserve that card. They don't deserve those 30 gallons of gas. They should be working for every nickel to pay for every gallon. And just click, 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 and out they go. Is that grace or what? Mom and dad working their butts off. Then it's time to go to college, and mom and dad have a home. If they have to, they can borrow against that home to send their kids to college. Have a business, have some collateral to send. So off they go. My dad's here with us today. I mean, 18 years old, there I go. I was kicking and screaming the whole way. I said, Dad, this is going to be the biggest mistake you've ever made, sending me to college, because I won't pass. I made lousy grades in high school. I was a dumb, dumb student. This college is not going to be my thing. So I get there, and the very first thing that happens is an Alpha Tau Omega. I'm already learning Greek. Just think of that. Alpha, Tau, Omega. I didn't know one word or one letter in Greek, and now I know three words. Alpha, Tau, Omega. An Alpha, Tau, Omega beer truck. Beer truck. I'd never seen one of those in my hometown. Get on. Jump on. Pouring mugs of beer for everybody. We get over to the fraternity. You're not allowed to drink beer in the fraternity. But for whatever reason, you're allowed to drink beer on the roof of the fraternity. And so the deal was, how do we get these kegs of beer up on the roof without walking through the fraternity house, which is illegal? Farm boy. There's one thing I do. I don't know how to read. I don't know anything about history. I don't know anything about books. But I do know how to take some ropes and pulleys and jerry-rig a system to get these kegs of beer on the top of this frat house in about 5 minutes. That was a skill set, Ed. Dad calls. I'm up there on the top fraternity drinking beer. Son, how do you like college? Dad, I just love it. I hadn't even been to class yet. Mandy is the first woman that I met at Colorado State University. The guys were all this side of the field house. The women over here, freshman initiation, were all walking out. Mandy, what dorm are you in? She said. I asked her. She says, Green Hall. I says, mine's Ellsworth, one beyond yours. I'd like to walk you to your dorm. So I walked her. We stood there in front of her dorm, and I said, would you like to go to a movie Friday night? She said, I'd love to. The rest is history. Is that grace? Is that grace? Today, all the young guys I like to mentor, they struggle. They work to figure out if this woman, they get out sheets of yellow paper like this, and they put all the pluses of this lady on this side and all the minuses on this side. And they just make this one big, long struggle. I met this girl. We go to a movie. We fall in love. We get married. How hard is this? Is that grace? Is that grace? So, endowed by our Creator, and so, every individual has personal value, and so, we're all created in the image of God. And so, we begin to understand freedom. And so, we're going to put some limitations. Government is not God. Government is not deity. In fact, you've got to do just the opposite. And our founding fathers all believed that. They all were very scared of the pesky nature, sin nature of men and women. So we have that going for us. Limited government, freedom, endowed by our Creator, rule of law, the Magna Carta, Protestantism, work hard, save and invest. Well, now I got to tell you something. Please think of it. The Garden of Eden, and now thousands and thousands and thousands of years that we've gone. In fact, I'm going to even bring it beyond thousands. I'm going to bring it all the way to the year 1800 AD. Now, 1800 AD is just about 200 years ago. So that's not very long. But now I'm going to bring history to you out to 1800 AD. Okay? Are you ready for this? Let's take the richest place on the earth in 1800 AD. It was Western Europe. Now, let me just tell you how rich they were in 1800. Do you know what the life expectancy of a typical person in France was in the year 1800? 27 years. That was life expectancy. 27 years in the year 1800. one of the richer countries in Western Europe, Germany. How many rich people did Germany have in 1800? Almost none. Do you know what? There were less than 1,000 people that had more than $1,000 of total wealth. Less than in Germany in the year 1800. I mean, right up until this time, what the world is full of is famines and starvation and very, 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 very little. You take any person out of the year 1800 and check their great, 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 and go back 1,000 greats, and there's hardly a dime's worth of difference between the way this person lives and this person lives here in 1800. That's just 200 years ago. And by the way, we're talking about the richest place on the earth when we're talking about Western Europe. Because in the 17th century, Western Europe was starting to grow economically. Why? The Magna Carta. Why? The writings of John Locke and freedom. Why? The writings of Martin Luther. Why? Protestantism. Why? Work hard, save, invest. Why? Beginning to understand freedom. Why? Understanding the dignity of individuals. Why? So we're beginning to see something in Western Europe. But I'm telling you how poor it was. 27 years was the longevity in France in 1800. Now do you want to talk about Africa and Asia? Now we move from poor to incredibly poor. Are you ready for this next statistic? The wheel wasn't even introduced in Africa till after 1800. The wheel. But is that the Africans' fault per se? No. Because they have the equator cutting right through the middle of that country, and so they have a very different kind of season. Fresh fruit everywhere. All the time. Now think how different a society has to do if you're an Iowa corn farmer or someone in Africa. In Africa, you want fresh meat? Go out, get a bow and arrow, shoot it. Got it. Fresh meat. Bam. You want fresh fruit of any kind? There it is to eat. You don't do that in Iowa. And I'll tell you, you don't do that in Iowa in November and December and January and February and March. So what do you have to do? You have to store your corn up in a corn crib. You have to prepare for the hard winter that's coming. And oh, by the way, if you harvest corn and put it on cribs and then you want to sell it, do you not need wagons? Do you not need wheels? Do you not need transportation? See how different life can develop when the fresh fruit is always there, the fresh meat is always there, as compared to being born and raised in that temperature system called Europe, and that temperature system well above the equator called North America. It does change some things. And it's just common grace. It could have been you. It could have been that the equator cut right through the middle of the United States in 1776. But if it had, it sure takes some incentives away to get the wheel. Not only the wheel, but engines, the gasoline engine, and electricity, and. I mean, when you think, and all this happened in the last two centuries. It was Eli Whitney who walked into Thomas Jefferson's office in 1800. 1800 now. Our republic is just now getting started. But now Thomas Jefferson is the president of the United States. Obviously, George Washington was our first. John Adams was our second. And Thomas Jefferson was our third. So we're talking about the year 1800. And Eli Whitney goes in with 6 sacks. He goes in. He dumps this sack out. And then dumps this sack out. And he dumps 6 sacks out on the table. And he says to Thomas Jefferson, "Tom, pick one piece out of each of these sacks and put it together." So Tom grabbed a piece, looked at it, put it, and put together a muzzle, put together a musket, a rifle, interchangeable parts. You mean you can make rifles with interchangeable? He just did it. He had 6 of them here and 6 of them here and 6 of them there. You can make 6 rifles with interchangeable parts, one here, one here. All of a sudden, now you can take cams and gears and pulleys and begin to build plows and cultivators, and now you can build McCormick reapers and now combine and recombine and all of a sudden, hey, we got to do more than just animal power. Oh, back speaking of animal power, though, go back now. Think of what, again, a common grace it is to have a horse, a bull, and a cow. This is pretty neat. In Africa, no domesticatable animals. You can't get a rope over, it's called zebra, but I've never said it that way, so I'm not going to. Zebra. But in Africa, they say zebra. You can't get a rope. You can't go and try to rope a zebra. You cannot do it. They can kick it off. They can kick the rope off. A horse won't do that. So the next thing you know, we can use a horse to pull a plow, horse to pull a wagon, a bull to pull some. Not in Africa, you can't. Have you ever tried to run an elephant down the middle of a sugar beet row or corn? Or are you, see what, again, common grace. So my point of keep bringing this up is we've got to be really careful not to be so judgmental, because we too could have been a country that was built where it's always producing bananas year-round, fruit year-round, fresh meat year-round, and we don't have to develop a system like we have to develop of the future. And oh, by the way, another beautiful thing about the Bible, it says time matters. Time matters, and time is linear. In most systems around the world, time is circular. So you ask the typical poor person around the world, did you plant your crops this spring? No, didn't give me, but there'll be another one. There'll be. Oh, I mean, for us, when that spring is gone, I know there'll be another one a year from now. But in the meantime, between now and then, oh, you didn't plant. Guess what? If you don't plant, you don't harvest. Do you see how we all had to think? And God, very linear, A through Z, Alpha through Omega, a beginning and the end. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And in the end, there will be a new heaven and a new earth in Revelation chapter. So, see, we have a linear view of time. Not only a linear view, which is important, instead of a circular one, but that days are important, time is important, hours are important. Again, when you have true truth, sanctify them with the truth. Thy word is truth. And it was just common grace that we have this given to us. Just common grace. But so we're out here to the year 1800, and the world, and now we can even take it further than 1800. Now let's come to the year 2009. Friends, it is unreal to see. Wayne Grudem and I, we flew into Lima. The first thing we did is we went into the environs of 11 million people city and got kind of the hillside. This is the truth. The first 10 women that we saw had no front teeth, and all the men that we saw, rotten teeth. Everybody, no front teeth, rotten teeth. How's that for openers? These people are 20 and 30 and 40 years old. No front teeth and rotten teeth. Come on. See children. I mean, literally, we would see children line. There'd be 10 or 20 or 30 kids going down this trail and up this mountain. And up this. Hopefully, they're going to get up there, and maybe there's going to be some food. And following those children was 30 or 50 dogs. None starving to death. You only see that in India and some other places like that, in some places in Africa. But certainly not well fed. Certainly not a nice glistening hair. Certainly not eyes that shine just a little bit. Are you kidding me? So you see 4.5 million people. This is the 21st century. Without water? Are you kidding me? Without electricity? You're teasing. No, I'm not teasing. Half of the world's population makes less than $2 a day. 3 billion people on the planet have never used a telephone. It's still ox cart. To come into Romania in the year 2000 and to get any, for heaven's sakes, it's like you had just dropped into the 14th century. You've got to be kidding me. Yes, China, the outer sliver of China, which the communists, obviously, they're trying to impress. Obviously. I mean, they've built all these high-rise buildings. There's nobody in them. Doesn't make any difference. Boy, they look fancy. And they've got the kind of window that you cannot tell if there's anybody in there or not. So Shanghai has 40 Empire State Buildings just in Shanghai. So, oh, well, the eastern sliver of China, you would swear this is the Garden of Eden. I mean, Beijing, all the poor housing has moved out, all just tree-lined, flower-lined. Ooh, gee, these are rich, rich Chinese. Oh, there are. Just a little sliver. There's 1.3 billion people. There's a few people that have a little money right along that edge. But the rest of China, are you kidding me? 600 million people crawling in a rice paddy all year long for 3,000 hours. 600 million people working 3,000 hours to produce 100 or 200 bushels of rice. Come on! You know how we think. Get that guy up there on that John Deere self-propelled combine. He'll do more work in one day than 5,000 people can do in a year. I know. That's exactly right. Oh, by the way, we then say, but jobs. And that's all the communists care about. Jobs, jobs, jobs. I said this to some Beijing professors. Look, if you're all so concerned about jobs, if you're also concerned about, hey, this is easy. Take the shovels away from all these people crawling through these rice paddies and issue everybody a tablespoon. Ah, good. Now we can have 10 people working that little rice paddy with tablespoons instead of shovels. It's not about jobs. It's about productivity. If it's about jobs, you and I would have said 100 years ago, are you telling me 100 years from now that 60 million people are going to have to get off the farm? 60 million people, and pray tell, where are they all going to work? There's going to be 57.5 million people getting off the farm between 1900 and the year 2000. And now where are they all going to work? Jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, guess what? 57.5 million people did get off the farm. Did get off the farm and have to do something else. But see, here's what creates jobs. We all get fretty when we see the General Electric with 3,000 people in its dishwasher plant, 3,000 people making one dishwasher every minute. That was the case 20 years ago. 3,000 people in this dishwasher plant, General Electric, Louisville, Kentucky, making one dishwasher every minute. To now, the plant's got 300 employees producing one dishwasher every 6 seconds. These big injection molding machines. Whomp! A whole dishwasher. Whomp! Another one. 6 seconds later, another one, and another one, and another one. A train moving through. Do you see? Now here's the point. Did 2,700 people in Louisville, Kentucky lose their jobs because that plant used to have 3,000. Now it has 300. 2,700 people lost their jobs. So you and I, oh, shoot me. Where are all these people going to work? So how does it work? How does economics work? Here's how economics works. When you can produce one dishwasher every 6 seconds and have it a good, high-quality dishwasher, you and I are spending less of our per capita income on a dishwasher than ever before in the history of mankind. And therefore, the money that we're now not spending on a dishwasher, what if we consume it? Creates jobs. What if we invest it? Creates jobs. What if we save it? It creates jobs. Get it? That's how it works. So that's why this president is so confused. He's not heard what you just heard from me. Just then. Jobs. 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 No, it's about productivity and the income from that productivity. But do we know where they're going to be? Do we know where the 2,700 people that used to work in Louisville, Kentucky for the General Electric dishwasher plant? Do we know? No. Do we know necessarily where the 57.5 million people that used to be in agriculture, where they're going to work? No. We don't. When Henry Ford came up with the horseless carriage, can you imagine the look on the people's faces who were in the buggy whip business? I mean, here, this is the meeting of the American Buggy Whip Association, and we've had a great, great meeting 100 years ago. Wait, we got one more speaker. Henry, come on up. Henry describes the horse's carriage. We said, Henry, with one of those, where do you use one of these? And Henry says, you don't. You don't? Where are all the buggy whip makers going to work now? Where are all the buggy people? Where are the horse and barney? Well, how about all the agriculture that supports all those horses? None the least, 40 pounds of horse poop every day that have to be shoveled out of the cities for per horse. My gosh, we've got 40,000 good minimum wage jobs shoveling horse poop. Where does that thing poop? It doesn't. Oh, no, please. It's just more than I can take. Do you see the common grace and how fortunate we are to we never have stood up and says American solution for American problems? We've said, come on, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Come on, send these, the homeless, tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Yes. But not only do we have that scene of the Statue of Liberty, Lady Liberty, standing there in the Hudson River, the New York Harbor, saying, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. But we have a theology that says, I am the light of the world. No one comes to the Father except through me. For by grace are ye saved through faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. All we like sheep have gone astray, each according to his own way. But God has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. Grace. Amazing grace that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. So the takeaway is we're so immersed with grace. We don't deserve those 55 founding fathers. We don't deserve that declaration. We don't deserve that constitution. We don't deserve learning from the beginning that every human being counts and is created in the image of God. We don't deserve a circumscribed government, which is now metastasized, and that's a subject for another day, which Wayne, as soon as he gets his political book done, will have some fun. There I get, I'll throw myself in with Wayne any day. I'm not stupid. We are so blessed with limited government. We are so blessed with free enterprise. We are so blessed with having so many among us that have filled that space of freedom. You all are doers and dreamers and creators. And it's just created a miracle like the world has never seen before. Period. It's just 5% of the world's population producing 1/3 of the world's wealth, 5% of the world's population producing 80% of the world's Nobel laureates, 5% of the world's population producing 90 of the 100 most important inventions of the 20th century. Please. Is it because we're smart? No. Is it because we work harder? Are you kidding me? Have you ever been to Latin America and see how some of those people work? Have you been to Africa and see how some of those people work? Have you been to Asia? They all work double shifts. They all work 16, 18 hours a day. So no. It's not us. It's not work. It's just grace that we have a system. Grace that we have property rights. Grace that we have deeds. Grace that we have limited government. Grace that we have transcendent truth. Grace that we worship a God that's way bigger than us. Grace that says, hallowed be thy name. Sanctified be thy name. Is there anything more important than to say, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed, hallowed, hallowed be thy name. You are holy. You are perfect. You are good. You are sovereign. You are gracious. You are merciful. And so if any of you go to the photography shop this Christmas and turn the picture back and say, that person, that picture doesn't do me justice. And the photographer says, ma'am, sir, you don't need justice. You need mercy. You need grace. It's the truth. One of the best books that I've read in the last year, far and away, is Keller's book, Timothy Keller's The Reason for God. A bunch of you have said to me this week, you've read George Gilder's book, Israel Test, and you said you really, really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you, Ed. I'm really blessed a bunch of you read it. The other book that you've got to read is the Startup Nation, written by two Jewish fellows, but I'm telling you, it's a dynamite book, The Startup Nation. But this by Philip Keller, what a neat Christmas book, The Reason for God. Let's pray. Father, pray that you've given Wayne and Margaret a restful and productive time in Florida with his dad. We're glad that he's had a little uptick in his life. We thank you for Wayne being a faithful and good son. Lord, we are so blessed to have Wayne in our congregation. For me, it's just an extraordinary experience to get to walk for a week at a time with a man that eats, sleeps, and breathes the Word of God and the love of Christ and the love of his fellow human beings. Lord, Wayne is extraordinary among us, and we, as his students, are most blessed that he's willing to sit and write one word at a time, one sentence at a time, one paragraph at a time, one page at a time. And he works and works and works. And at the end of a weekend, a page. End of a week, 10 pages. Lord, persistence, persistence. You also teach us that as a glorious principle. Thank you for giving Wayne the gift of persistence and for what he has produced that blesses all of us. We look forward to him coming back. We look forward to this Christmas season, this class party that's coming up this week. We ask your blessing on it. Lord, we're thankful that we have a wonderful, wonderful place that we can come to and have a cup of coffee and have a roll and share a little fellowship and get to hear the teaching of Dr. Grudem. Lord, be with every person here, especially those among us right now that are in special needs, especially those that are dealing with cancer, those that are dealing with the loss of a spouse, those with a relationship problem. Everybody has economics as a problem also. So, Lord, you are the sovereign God. We feel blessed. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you. Appreciate it.